You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasquim, Mustail. All right, everyone, good morning today. I hope everyone is having a wonderful day so far. Before we get started, I just want to play a song from the movie that I'll be discussing today. It's called You Got Me from Colby Kalet.
You're stuck on me in my laughing eyes. I can't pretend, though I try to hide. I like you. I like you. I think I felt my heart skip a beat. I'm standing here and I can hardly breathe. You got me, yeah. You got me. Take my hand, it's just so sweet. And that crooked smile of yours, it knocks me off my feet. Oh, I just can't get enough. How much do I need to fill me up? Feels so good, it must be love. It's everything that I've been dreaming. So fill me up. It feels so good, it must be love. I give up.
Cause no matter what I do, oh. All right. Sorry about the error in the middle. I forgot that my computer was totally connected to the audio. But yeah, before we get started into the discussion, I also want to turn on another song in the movie called Love Story from Taylor Swift. So I hope you guys enjoy.
Uber One member Sarah Silverman here. When people call me for advice, I always say join Uber One for 5% off restaurants and a $0 delivery fee. I also suggest flossing. Join Uber One.
Order minimums apply. Percentage off discounts only available for participating restaurants. See uber.com/Uber One for details.
At Capital One, we like to ask, what do you see when you see you? A risk taker?
Skydiving? Really? You want me to jump? No way!
I'd rather lay on my couch. In my sweats.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. With Quick Check, find out which Capital One credit cards you'll be approved for with 100% certainty and no risk to your credit score. You've got this. We've got you. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Quick Check pre-approval is subject to terms and conditions.
Yeah.
All right. Apologies again. I totally forgot that I'm using Spotify and the ads are going on. But yeah, that was the song. Both songs came out from the movie Letters to Juliet, which is the movie that we're going to be talking about today. I actually have two guests. Randy, do you want to start by reintroducing yourself again, and then we can move on to the new guest today?
Yes. Hi, I'm Randy. This is officially my show now. I think I've been here three times. It's my show now. Yeah, I do anything and everything now at CITR. I was talking to Hannah the other day in the spoken word department that I'm obsessed with hearing my own voice. And so I just go on the air to talk about my opinions so that people listen to me, because I guess not enough people in my real life listen to me. But yeah, I'm happy to be here again, and I'm excited to talk about this movie.
Cool. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. My name is Harmela. This is my first time being on air ever. So, woo for me. yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this film. I like watching movies in general. So hopefully, you know, depending on how this goes, I can come back another time, talk some more.
Anytime. You should come back anytime. Actually, anyone is welcome in my show. Whoever is into films or anything, I'm actually down to watch films, because I've kind of watched almost all of them. Well, not all of them, probably. Probably not. Probably maybe all the rom-coms in like Netflix or Disney Plus or whatever. So any recommendations, I'm totally open for. But yeah, today we're going to be discussing about Letters to Juliet. I'll try and do my best to summarize the movie. It's basically about this young girl named Sophie that has a fiance named Victor. I think they're getting married. And so as they're like vacation slash like honeymoon, they go to Venice, Italy. And then, this is hard to summarize because I don't want to spoil everything. But anyways, yeah, so they go to Venice. And then Sophie discovers this like place where people would write letters to their old lovers, which I kind of have a question for later on. Mm-hmm. And then she ends up writing a letter for this letter that she found that was written like 50 years ago, weirdly inside a wall. and then she meets like the person. And then she kind of falls in love with the person's grandson.
Nice.
That's like the most best way I can. I need to practice this. But yeah, that's basically what it's about. So I just want to start off with what was something that you guys liked about the movie that maybe most rom-coms that you watched didn't kind of offer? Because I feel like I got a very different vibe from Letters to Juliet compared to other rom-coms, even though they're both rom-coms, and I did catch some comedic aspects in Letters to Juliet. So do you guys have anything that you guys particularly enjoyed in the movie, or you guys want to point out and just talk about?
I do. Where are all the older people looking for love? Like, in all of these rom-coms, I mean, you have, like, the same age demographic. Usually it's, like, it's ranging from like age 6 to 25. And like those are the only people who are like capable of falling in love. Mm. And finally you have like this gumptious like older woman and everything who's looking for her man. And I don't know. I was just like, yeah, they like.
That was interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Was she married, by the way? Or what happened to her husband?
He died.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was that specifically explained in the? Oh, okay. I may have lost track of that part. But yeah, I think that was an interesting part about the movie, is that like a stereotype where more, younger people kind of fall in love in movies, but in this case, it was an older woman, and they actually took it to marriage, which was very interesting because it was just a different scene. Do you have anything, Randy?
Yeah, I think very similar to what you said. I really liked having like, because I think it was the way that the storylines paralleled between like you know, this older woman finding her second love, right? Because, you know, she'd already been married. She loved her first husband. It wasn't like it ended terribly, but she was like, oh, I want this second chance to, you know, meet this person I loved. And then having the character of Sophie, who, like, is younger, but also very similar, going on, like, a same journey. So I think it was very interesting that they kind of, like, paralleled the experiences of Claire and Sophie to develop this, like, very distinct relationship between them. I personally don't know if I categorize this movie as a rom-com. I think it's so much more about, like, friendship and family relationships. And, like, those dynamics that, like, the romance is there, and I love it, but I think this movie speaks to so many larger themes beyond that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I didn't really get, like, the romance. The romance was a bit hidden in the movie. It wasn't, like, straightforward in, like, most movies are like.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of, like, the search of love. And then the journey of that was the buildup of the relationships between Claire, I think, and then and Charlie. And I mm-hmm. love Charlie. Actually, my favorite character in this movie is Charlie.
I love Charlie.
He is he really brought up the mood. Mm-hmm. And then later on, it was kind of serious. And I think the Romeo and Juliet aspect of the movie was like comedic in a sense.
Yeah.
I like the way they put it mm-hmm. in. And then the scene where... he would like climb up the thing and then he falls.
Yeah.
I think that was a very romantic scene.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to hear you both talk about like the rom-com or it not necessarily fitting into the category of like a rom-com, because I've noticed that in a lot of rom-coms, it seems like romance just like falls in their lap. You know, like people are going mm-hmm. about their day and they're not trying to be in love and like, they're actively fighting against it.
Yeah.
But, like, love grabs hold of them, whereas, like, these people are, like, searching under every rock, like, in every corner, trying
literally.
To find, like, a glitter or just something that resembles mm. romance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, mm. I think that's... but you know what the thing is? Whenever I see these movies that don't really follow the basic plot line, like, not... it's like not love is searching for you, but you're searching for love. It's like a new plot line, which is eventually going to become a cliche. The age gap, the age of who is falling in love in a movie is also going to become a cliche now, because that was not the usual plot that it follows. I don't know. I kind of feel very sad whenever these new things come up, because then they're eventually going to become a cliche and it's not really going to shock the audience anymore, yeah. Which I'm like, ugh. Because one of my goals is actually to make my own cliche.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's my thing. I don't know if my prof understood, because she said, yeah, like write down a goal of yours, and I said I want to make my own cliche, and I handed in my assignment. But
I think that's a really good goal, though.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. But it's like, but there's so many things being created, right? Yeah. So it's like, oh, how am I gonna find something that doesn't follow the normal or stereotypical plot of a rom-com? But
I mean, like every great has said, if it comes from you, then it is true. I think I just
I like that quote.
So I actually think maybe I made that up myself. But seriously though, like, you know, you just come up with something that like you're like, I've experienced this in my life, and then, well, I don't know how cliches work. I don't know who's coming up with them and how that looks in the writer's room, but...
Yeah, I think it's like the more you see it in movies, you kind of recognize it, and then it'll become like, oh, it's another same story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of want to move on to the characters. First off, do you guys have... feelings where you don't like a character in rom-com movies? Because usually rom-com movies are usually about, like, you know, like love and stuff. But is that hatred like big, or is it more of like, ugh, like why did, like, because eventually it's like the girl is with a guy and then they don't work out and she finds another guy. So at the end it's like, yeah, they kind of deserve to be with each other. So then the hatred between the person that she was originally with isn't as big. But do you ever feel like that hatred is like still there when you watch rom-com movies specifically, because they're not usually created to to kind of give you those feelings, I guess. Unless like cheating is involved. But then eventually they end up with their lover, so.
So I took your question to mean like hatred of any character in a rom-com.
Yeah.
And I was gonna say I often sometimes will dislike the main character because there's too strong of a relationship between rom-coms and the whole I'm not like other girls trope that makes me, and I don't think this is true. I don't find Sophie to be like that. I don't think she like does that, but that's just like me talking in general about rom-coms. And I think because of so much like how much internalized misogyny and like just straight up misogyny goes into writing rom-coms sometimes, it is likely that like a lot of people watching it are going to be like, wow, this character is kind of just annoying. I don't think it's a hatred. I think it's just an annoyance. But to actually get to your real question, which I feel like is more about Sophie and Victor, I think this movie is actually really interesting because I don't dislike Victor. I think that he's a relatively toxic person because throughout the entire movie, I don't know what the right word to describe this, but he basically manipulates Sophie because every time he's like, I want to do this thing, but like, oh, I feel so bad. I feel so bad. I'm hurting you. Yeah. Like, tell me no, but like, oh, I really want to do it. But you can tell me no, but oh my gosh, I'm going to be so sad if I can't do it. Yeah. Like, that is straight up just manipulation. So I don't dislike him. I don't think he's like a terrible person, but I think that's what's so kind of interesting about the movie because typically that's what they'll do. They just create this very toxic, like, you know, like straight up just awful man. So it's very easy for the audience to be like, oh, that's the good guy. And like, I think you still do that in this movie, but it's less of like, you don't waste your time having animosity towards Victor. You're just like, oh, I can't wait until she falls in love with Charlie. Because obviously she's going to fall in love with Charlie. But yeah, that's kind of where I stood, at least for this movie, which I enjoyed.
What did you think about, or what do you think about the question I asked?
In terms of, like, hating characters in rom-coms, I think for me, it's usually people who, like, have... Are we allowed to swear?
No.
Okay, cool.
I wish we could.
Then you can say, like, people whose minds are in the gutter, but just like like not the dirty kind of gutter, but just like who can't see what's right in front of them and like who get in their own way and like not in a charming or like, oh, like I get it kind of way, but just people who are awful to themselves and then therefore awful to other people. I feel like this is something I've been seeing in more recent like rom-coms or even like Netflix shows. Never Have I Ever comes to mind, where you have this character who's understandably been through a lot and then ends up hurting so many people along the way and themselves, which, you know, it's understandable, it's relatable, but that doesn't mean that you like them that much, or that's just how I feel towards Debbie. And Never Have I Ever. But in terms of this movie, hearing what you said about Victor and like this realistic sort of constant manipulation of I recognize what you want and I recognize that like this would be so nice and I want to do all these things for you, but I have to attend to the business and this would make me so happy and I'd be so upset if I can't go, but I understand that you're upset too. And so you're like trying to recognize in terms of like that other person, your partner, that I see that you're not happy with what I'm doing, and I recognize that. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's okay, because I'm recognizing that you don't like what I'm doing, but I'm still going to do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And it's a frustrating dynamic, and that's why it is, you know, at the end, or no spoilers, right?
It's okay. You can spoil it.
At the end.
I don't know why I said that. Last episode, I said, beware my audience because we are going to spoil it. But then I don't know why I started off with, I don't know. You can spoil as much as you
want. I mean, I already spoiled it. So
yeah. We've spoiled quite a bit.
So when she finally does sort of like break that off, and I think it's interesting that it also happens like back in New York City where they're living. That like, no, I I can't do this anymore. Victor also represents, like, this sort of New York hustle and, like, distraction that I for some reason, I'm very scared of. It's something that I'm like, these people, like, I don't know. They make me nervous. But just, like, kind of, like, go, go, go. And then her removing herself from that and then heading back to, like, this city of love, back to Venice and everything to, like, give herself the story that she wanted from the beginning. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Hmm. I actually want to go back to the point where you said how in movies the character that's – you could see that a character is going through a lot, but then they end up hurting other people. But in those cases, do you guys have empathy for them because of what you kind of saw, what they went through? Or is it like, okay, like that doesn't mean that your actions are justified? Because I feel like the more you know about someone, it's so much harder to think objectively and really just point out the things that they're not doing right. So in those cases, do you guys, like, let's put it in, like, percentage wise, like 70% empathy, or is it like 30% like hatred? Like, how is it like? Because I'm really curious, because I'm pretty sure there's a reason why that's the people that write these, like, build up those kind of thingies, and then they would like cut it. And I don't know, what do you guys think? You guys don't need to put in a percentage. I was just giving you a better idea about what you guys felt. But yeah,
I think there's always a balance and everything. And as long as when it's very clear that the intention was there and then the outcome was just absolute chaos, then I think it's very understandable in that. And, like, that leads to a lot more, at least for me, empathy and, like, okay, I get it and I feel for you. Whereas when the intentions aren't clear and you sort of just have these characters going about hurting things, like, and hurting other people in their path of love, let's say, then that's where kind of the empathy is withdrawn. If I don't understand what you're doing and why you're doing it and what the goal was from the beginning, then when you hurt people, it doesn't feel justified. It just feels like, well, this is something you did, and I don't really get why you would do that.
Mm. Yeah. I feel like mine is too wrapped up in, like, who the character is. Mm. Like, my ability to feel empathy for you if you've gone through something and then done something terrible is very much based on, like, how old you are and, like, also, like, who you are as a person. Like, I feel a lot more empathy for people that, I don't know, have, like, are facing more systemic barriers, because I feel like that's, like, an added thing. So, like, if you put, like, a white dude in front of me whose, like, mom died when he was a teenager, and then he decides he's going to murder someone, I'm going to be like, yeah, no, I don't. Like, what am I supposed to, you know, how am I supposed to, like, I'm sorry your mom died, but, like, you're literally, like, that's not a very good example. But I think, like, in the case of, like, Never Have I Ever, mm-hmm. I do have more mm-hmm. empathy for, is it Debbie? Or?
Yeah, Debbie.
Debbie, because of her age mm-hmm. and, like, what happened to her is so recent. Mm-hmm. But I still think she's a disaster, but that's, like, the part of the character. Yeah. But, yeah, like, mine is very wrapped up. I honestly think an age is, like, my number one factor, because if you're, like, a kid or a teenager, like, we're all dumb when we're teenagers. But, like, if you show me a 30-year-old character that's, like, doing these, like, nonsensical mm. things, then I'm way less likely, because I'm like, you're an adult. You should know better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But so it's very, like, I feel like, yeah, mine is actually very much, if I had to, like, break it down to one thing, it would be age very much determines if I'm going to feel more empathy or more, like, anger and dislike.
Do you think that's why, like, there's so many rom-coms that center around that sort of age range? Is it because mm-hmm. there's just more room for chaos?
Yeah, I think it is, because, like, we have this idea. I've actually talked to so many people about this recently, because I'm in my early 20s. And, like, this, there's an idea, expectation that, like, your 20s are a disaster. Like, you're just supposed to, like, you know, figure things out and mess around and mess up and do things bad. And I'm like, I actually hate that. It gives me a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think that's why, like, you know, rom-coms are centered around people in their 20s, because no one expects anything from them. Versus when you turn 30, you should have a career, you should have a family, you should own property. So, like, there's a lot less, you know, space for you to mess up and to, like, do better. Yeah. And I also think, like, this, like, me judging people based on their age of, like, messing around is a societal thing that's been taught to me. I'm not going to say it's, like, an independent thing or it's good. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely something that, like, capitalism has taught me that, like, you should be productive by this age. You should have your life figured out. You know, you don't have any more space to mess up. You should know better.
Yeah.
When in reality, people make mistakes. And I'd like to scrap my murder example. I don't know why I said that was way darker than what I was intending to say. But the intention I was getting behind is, like, there's so many factors that, like, go into, like, how you're raised, how you're shaped through society that, like, determine, you know, how you're going to act and how you understand, you know, your actions.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that stereotype or that how like the societal things are involved in this, because I have that too when I watch movies. When I watch like a 40-year-old man cheat on his wife, I'd be like, why are you like, right? But then yeah. If I see a 20-year-old guy do it to his like girlfriend, I'd be like, bro, come on, like. Right. So that's also a messed up thing in my head. But I think that's also very weird, because now if I want to break that stigma, it's like no one's going to empathize for a 40-year-old man cheating. Not that I'm justifying it, but you know what I mean. Right.
Yeah.
It's like that. The feelings towards that is just much stronger than like a 20-year-old, like an 18-year-old doing it to his like high school sweetheart.
Mm-hmm. The response is always like,
yeah,
at your grown age,
yeah,
like that's what you're up to.
I think that's pretty sad, actually, because now you have to think about when you're writing these stories, or when I write these stories, I kind of want to make it original, but I also unconsciously think about what people kind of want to see, or like what plot they want to, or what would they want, or like empathize, or like kind of like, just, I don't even have any words. They kind of, they just want to relate to, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think we should move on to Letters to Juliet, because I think we're shifting. back to Victor. Do you think that Victor's actions, aside from the manipulation, like just whatever he's doing is okay? As in, like, is it justified? Like, when you see him, it's like, I know what you're trying to do, and therefore it's like, okay, maybe the way you executed it wasn't right, but I know what you're trying to do.
Honestly, yeah. Like, I don't know if people should always be in relationships at certain periods in their life, and there's times where you just cannot maintain, like, fulfilling the standards of a healthy relationship while also pursuing something you're so devoted to. I mean, it's clear. I really liked that scene where one of the secretaries who write the letters for the people who are asking for advice about their loved ones, when he is basically, I don't know what Italian dish specifically he was like asking about, but they were in the kitchen and he was like, oh, well, like I'm just gonna hang out with her a little bit and learn about this dish, yeah, because I need to do da-da-da. Like, there's, it's clear that there's so much love there, and it's, I guess it's hard to just pour all your love in equally into two different places at the same time. So I understand Victor from that standpoint.
It's also that happened with the scene where Sophie was in, I think, the hotel room with Victor, and she was explaining how her day was, but all Victor is doing is eating the scone or whatever that that Sophie got from the woman from mm-hmm. the Juliet office. Mm-hmm. And he's just commenting about that, and I'm like, bro, come on, like,
yeah,
what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Just like, listen. But I think, ooh, this is a, or actually I'll just let Randy talk about the question, and I also have one more question to ask.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think that I just gestured and I realized nobody could see us. Hermila, I agree with you. that yes, I think that, like, to me, Victor is a very interesting character, because, like I said, I don't think he's bad. I don't think he's, like, bad. I truly just think he should not be engaged to somebody at this point in his life. Like, he clearly has prioritized his life, his life's work, like his opening this restaurant, right? And he's so committed to this restaurant that, like, he's essentially married to his restaurant. Like, he should not have someone else in his life at this point, which I think is, again, another societal standard that, like, being able to recognize that, you know, and being like, I am at this point in my life, I'm prioritizing things, I can't give myself, you know, to a relationship. And I think that's kind of what the dynamic in their, you know, relationship is like, that, like, they're kind of both coming to it, and he's clinging to it more than Sophie is, I think, which is interesting. But yeah, I think that he just should not, he should just not be engaged right now. He shouldn't be in a relationship. He should just be single and focus on his restaurant so that he can just do the things that he wants to do, yeah, without having to, like, manipulate someone or, like, fake this guilt or even feel guilt. I truly think he probably does feel some guilt. Like I said, I don't think he's, like, unfeeling. But yeah, that's kind of, I think, where I stand with him.
I almost got the sense of him liking the idea of having a partner.
Yeah.
And having a business and having a drive and a passion and also a person that he can go home to, mm-hmm, that can listen. There's also this thing where in these, like, marriages or relationships where there's a misunderstanding of, I'm doing this for us. Like, this, whatever I'm doing that you think that I'm not paying attention to is because that I want to make us better. Mm. But for Victor, I don't think I feel that much. I feel like it's just for him and his sake of success and just all about building himself up. Do you guys also feel that towards Victor as well?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, you had that scene where he had like the tickets to go to the winery, mm-hmm, and he's like, there's only one ticket, so I have to go by myself, so I'm so sorry, but anyways, I can't wait to try this wine. So
I like that you're doing his voice.
I like it a lot. It's actually pretty similar.
Yeah. Thank you. I've been working on it. My walk over here. And so, yeah, there's definitely this sense of, like, I'm doing this. Like, this isn't a wee thing. And even to that point of, like, listening, she's there's points where she's like, oh, I want to tell him about this, like, even the letters. And then he kind of just trails over her and, like, doesn't have it within himself to, like, listen to what she's really, mm-hmm, excited to tell him about. But he is so energized and, like, ready to just pour all of the things that he's noticing or trying and, like, delving into with her. And so it is very much like a one-way thing in terms of, you're my person to tell all of this to.
Yeah.
And I don't really need to hear much from you.
That's actually pretty sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually want to add on to what you said, but before we do that, I'm just going to put up some ads and some PSAs, so we'll just go ahead and do that.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roaster's Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or grocery checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today. CITR is powered by Guayaquil Yerba Mate. Yerba mate is a naturally caffeinated drink that comes in a variety of formats, from loose leaf to cans to bottles. Yes, the yellow ones. Guayaquil mate is all organic, non-GMO, and sure to make you come to life. Guayaquil is more than just a yerba mate brand. They're focused on personal, social, ecological, and cultural growth through their commitment to regenerative practices, which include stewarding the South Atlantic rainforest and partnering with indigenous South American communities through the production of yerba mate. Visit guayaquil.com, G-U-A-Y-A-K-I.com, to learn more and find this delicious drink near you. Or stop by CITR station on UBC campus for a free yerba mate can.
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
You've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you love has deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue, right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
Here's how he feels about it. Blues ain't nothing but a man, good man feeling bad, no how. That's all that is.
All right, we're back. I want to touch upon the love aspect of the movie, of how genuine the love was, which is the part that I always question when I see rom-coms. Is it love? Like, really, Sophie? Because there's a lot of cases where the protagonist, which is Sophie in this case, and Victor, many cases where they're already in a relationship, and it took him so long to realize that it was not right that they got engaged. And then she met Charlie. So do you think there's a factor in which they were obviously not in a very good relationship? It wasn't a healthy relationship. Both of them didn't have the same views. And she was not searching for someone, but she knew that she wasn't in a place that she was supposed to be. And then Charlie comes in, and apparently she falls in love with him, and I'm like, wait, is this love from, it's like this, does she love Charlie because he gives more attention to her compared to Victor, or is it because Charlie is someone that she's been waiting for or whatever, or right? So it's like, is the love something that would have lasted if this movie had sequels? Like, would they really have lived in that beautiful city Venice and just out, you know, like, loved each other for forever? Because this is something that I question a lot about movies. This is why I really want movies that where they fall in love. And I want to see the aftermath. You guys know what happened when Harry met Sally? They divorced.
Yeah.
I think they divorced.
Yeah.
And they made, like, a funny skit about it. And I'm like, come on. Like, that just ruins the entirety of the movie. Because it's like, you just ruin, like, this love story. And then it, like, I'm not against divorcing. But it's just, like, that fantasy or, like, that thing, that Disney storyline just gets crushed. In order for me to have a good memory of the story and just keep it in me and just be like, yeah, that was a heartwarming movie, is to kind of see what it was like for them. Because I know that it exists, like, not a perfect but just love being eternal is it exists.
Yeah,
but I want to see if it existed for them, because if it didn't, then, like, it's almost like you're building it up and then you just crush it later.
Yeah.
That makes me think, what do we love more, love or the story? And, like, the story we get to tell ourselves about love. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know if love is that magical, but the story we put around it and the idea of fate and all of this makes love like this untoppable sort of goal. And so when you're talking about Sophie and does she love Charlie? Well, I mean, Sophie strikes me as a kind of person who is like me, where the story behind it, that's really the propelling force. And I don't know if I understand that they've gone on this journey together and they've gotten to know each other, but
her character blinded me in seeing that she actually cheated on Victor.
Yeah.
Like,
I think, yeah. My struggle with this film in particular to be like, oh, like they live happily ever after, is I always find it really hard to believe that like a character who's like in a long-term relationship, engaged in this case, falls in love with someone else within like 2 weeks, because I'm like, you're a bad person then. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm not saying that like, you know, you can feel distant, but I just kind of like have some awareness and like recognize then that your relationship is ending. But like to just like not really say that. And then to just be like, so to answer your question, I don't think Charlie and Sophie are in love at the end of the movie, but I think they could fall in love after the movie. So where I see those two characters is like they've set an intention to do this. Like they're going to like make the move forward to essentially date. I don't think they're in love. They obviously say that they're in love, but I don't think they're in love. I just think there's an attraction and they like each other. So I think there's space for them to fall in love after the events of the movie. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I see the ending. Mm-hmm. Because I feel the same way. Like the idea that like Lorenzo and Claire are just like happily in love. I'm like, you're 15. Like if I ran into anyone who knew me when I was 15 now and I'm literally 23... we would have nothing in common. Like, it would never, you know, that was like...
it'd be kind of awkward.
Yeah.
So I used to play, so like house with people. And, you know, and then I meet them and I'd be like, oh my God. You remember that time we used to play house and you were the dog?
Yeah. So I just, like, I don't buy that any of these characters actually love. The only thing I buy is that Victor is still in love with his restaurant. That's, like, the only story of love that I get out of this. Mm-hmm. But I think that... to me, this story represents the possibility to love. And I think that's what the characters end on. But I do want to say really quickly, this is the bonus of reading romance novels, because romance novels will always have an epilogue. So you get to move like 4, 5, 10 years in advance, in the future, and like see their relationship then, which is something that rom-coms and like romance movies don't have. But when in my show, when I was talking to my aunt one time, we were discussing like what, you know, what proves to you that this movie or this book is a romance and like the characters love each other. And she distinctly pointed out that it is the epilogue, and like the ability to like see the characters written 10 years in the future where, you know, they have a house or maybe they have a kid or they're doing something that they love. So it works your imagination to be like, oh, yes, this is happy. I can close the book and move on with my life. Mm-hmm. There's a lot less questioning. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should add epilogues to movies.
That is a great idea. Honestly. That is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Going to Sophie's character, I think that's one of the problems that I guess like introverts, like she's not introvert, but she just keeps everything to herself. Mm-hmm. And she keeps it to the last moment where it almost throws the person off that she's with. And it's a problem because she's just dragging it on. And she was certain before that it wasn't working and that she was eventually going to do something. But she just moved it on, kissed Charlie. And then later on, she would break up with Victor. Victor. And be like, why are you... like, what's dragging you so long? Is it because of the fear that she's going to lose Victor? Or is it the fear that it's like, it might not work out? It's probably like a summer fling or something. I don't know. Like, what is it that's just having you just drive it so long to the point where it's like stupid?
Mm-hmm. She seems like, in the movie, the kind of person who sort of takes the passenger seat and everything. Like, I feel like there's drivers. And just because of her more timid nature and, like, I don't want to say she almost lets him walk over or lets Victor walk over her, but she kind of does. And that's also, like, I don't know if that's her fault necessarily. It's not her fault. It's Victor's. But this idea, like, is her kiss with Charlie while she's engaged to Victor, is that some sort of, like, evil act? And I wonder, if there was no Charlie involved, what would this relationship with Victor pan out to be? Would it be something that lasted for, let's say, another 5 years? Or would it be something that was taken to a marriage if there wasn't some other thing to basically be like, well, I can go leave and have that to come to. Like, I can mm-hmm. go find someone else and pursue love elsewhere. And is Charlie somebody that really wants to be with Sophie? Like, I also wonder the sort of, like, glimmer of having someone who's unavailable and not necessarily someone that you can have something with. There's always that, I feel like, dynamic in rom-coms.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's like, I like that hard to get thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I want that because it's hard to get.
And I just can't have it. And it doesn't want me back. So it just makes it even more desirable. But yeah, like, what would their happy ending be? Are they going to live in London? I'm assuming that's where Charlie's from because of his British accent. But yes. Yeah,
I think it wouldn't have lasted.
No.
Because eventually she was going to find someone either in her office, like either like from workplaces or from, I don't know, like a bar where she like just ran into her friend, like some kind of interaction that she'll eventually have that'll wake her up to what she's in now.
Mm.
And I think that was what happened was she. Do you guys almost think that she went to Venice to kind of confirm her love with Victor? It's like, yeah, maybe if we go through this like amazing time at Venice, I'll like, you know, like you're the, you know, I'm going to remember what I loved about you. Because I feel like that trip was like, because imagine how Victor is like when he's not on vacation. And he's like that in vacation. Like that whole point was to have fun and to spend time with your person, with your partner. And he does that. Like, imagine how he's like at home. He comes home and then, right? So it's like, maybe she was like, okay, maybe if we go as an excuse of like a honeymoon or something, we'll just go and maybe I'll see like if I really am. Because I feel like she really tried. She's like, she like planned everything out, but Victor just destroyed all that and just wanted to go his way, which she's probably aware about. They've been engaged. I'm, like, she knows what kind of person Victor is, but I feel like she held on to that hope of like, yeah, maybe if we go on a vacation, he won't be like that. Maybe he will change and just, you know, just have a good time with me. Because I think it's not about the passion or the drive that Victor had that made him like that. It's just, he's just like that. Like, if he didn't have the restaurant, I honestly think that he probably wouldn't have followed Sophie's plan or whatever. I think he would have wanted to do what he wanted to do because of how strong his feelings are. It's like, oh, but he doesn't want to be the bad guy, so he's going to try and manipulate her, right? So it's like, oh, I have one ticket. So, you know, like, I can't, you know, right? So it's like, I don't buy it. Like, you being passionate and having a drive about your restaurant, that's not enough. I think that's just you.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. Like, I think Victor is just a selfish person. That's his, like, downfall to, like, try to be in a relationship is that he's too selfish to be in a relationship. Yeah. I also think it's interesting that, like, yeah, like, they clearly do go there with, like, Sophia's intention is, like, it's, like, a pre-honeymoon, and it's supposed to be romantic, but it's very interesting that, like, Victor makes this very clear from the very beginning that he's there for work. Mm-hmm. Like, even when he, I forget who he's talking to, but he's, like, describing the trip to someone, he's like, oh, we're here visiting my suppliers. Like, it's a very different outlook. So I feel like, honestly, I do feel like Sophie just, she, like, tried for, like, 2 days. And then when Victor's like, I want to go to the wine auction, she's like, fine. I'm gonna do so. Then she does, like, she goes to the, you know, the Juliet statue or whatever, and then she finds the secretaries of Juliet, and then she spends time with them, and then she ends up going on this road trip essentially to find love and write, which she's very passionate about. So yeah, I do think it's very interesting that, like, it happens very quickly, but I feel like you're right, Jeff, it was like building, and it was like a build up to her, like, this was her last attempt. But then why didn't she just break up with him? Yeah. Maybe it was like, she's like, oh, I don't want to do it in Venice, but, like, what? I don't know. It's just
like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, would be awkward. Yeah, if I were to rewrite this movie very quickly, I think what I would do is I would have her break up with him before she goes on the road trip. Like, I would have had her, you know, when he went to the wine auction, or when he said, I want to go to the wine auction, like, that scene where he's, like, ignoring her and, like, eating and just, like, completely dismissing her, I think that scene could have done so well for her to be, like, Victor, and then he, like, ignores her, and he's like, Victor, whatever, and then she's like, I can't do this anymore. And, like, that's when they break up. And, like, yes, it would have been sad, but I think it would have made the actions of her and Charlie feel more authentic and more real in the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also would have loved to see what their relationship was like at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because, like, why are you here? Like, this guy is clearly not invested in putting in half the amount of effort that he's putting into his restaurant and his cooking, that he's like, what? He won't put that same amount or even half of that amount into the relationship. But I can also, just based on his personality type and, like, he is selfish, but he has so much passion, see how maybe that could be so appealing at the beginning. And when someone, you're going through this honeymoon phase and someone pouring all of this energy into dates and coming up with these fun ideas, and clearly he's a guy with a lot on his mind and there's a lot happening in there. And so maybe that could have been so alluring at the beginning. And then, like, this Venice trip could have been, oh, like, maybe I can reconnect with that and, you know, have the Victor that I met at the beginning and who was so passionate about doing all of these things with me. And clearly Venice was not that. It was a work trip for him and a pre-honeymoon for her.
Yeah.
But I just really would have loved to see them at the beginning, and then also what you mentioned, Randy, of just, like, cutting it off at this crucial point to really also fully delve. I would have loved to see her just, like, really come into herself fully.
Yeah.
Separate from him on that trip with Charlie and Claire.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have wanted to see also the relationship before, because I'm like, how did this even get up to this point? Like, how did she handle it till this? And then now she just suddenly decided that it was all done. Victor also gives me mixed feelings about who he actually is. I'll just say this and we'll probably have to end it. But I don't know if he's actually a person that, if I believe that he's a person that did it for the idea of success, where he has a partner, he has a business, he has a family. Like, and if he actually did it for that reason, that means he's not a very good person. He's a very selfish person that has very strong stereotypes that he wants to follow, and he cares about what other people think. But the way he was acting towards Sophie was just so oblivious. I was like, bro, are you, like, dumb? Like, what? How did you? Right? So, because most people, if you're saying that you're going to go to a wine auction for a couple days, like, aren't you going to worry about what she's going to do in Venice for a couple? Like, she doesn't even live there.
Yeah,
Like, you don't, you're not curious what she's going to do, who she's going to meet, where she's going to go. Like, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, like, unbelievable how he just doesn't think about anything else but whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's just so, like, there was these moments where she was like, oh, no, it's okay. I'll be doing some other stuff for a couple of days. Like, and then he's like, okay, good. Yeah. What? Like, what?
What? Doesn't even ask why.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's just having so much fun doing his own thing. So I'm like, he's, I think I'm leaning more towards him just being kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Just kind of has one thing, just one thing in front of him, and that's all he's going to be doing.
Yeah. He does not care about her at the end of the day.
No.
And yeah, thank you for Randy and Harmela for coming on my show. We did go a bit over time, but I would love to have you guys back. Just let me know. Anybody else that wants to join my show, you guys can come. Just come by CITR and we can talk. So, yeah, everyone have a lovely day. And-